Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a pack of monkeys in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Long Box Guys. With me as always are some of my very best friends since I was a little kid. Josh Whopper, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing pretty good. I am drinking Little Choppy, a hoppy session ale from Mast Landing Brewing out of Portland, Maine.
Dilly dilly. Mike, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and I am drinking some Eagle Rare Bourbon.
Ooh, dilly dilly to that. You're doing a Johnny Walker Skywalker glass. Nice. Tom, who is broadcasting from the dark dimension of hell because he has no lights on in whatever room he's stuck in while he's podcasting. How you doing and what are you drinking? Is it the pitch black tears of devils?
I am drinking some Trader Joe's Canadian whiskey, because I've got a bit of a sore throat, but other than that, I'm doing all right.
Doesn't sound it, but okay. So who here grew up in Palmer, Mass? Everybody?
Nope.
Just me.
Just one.
Area.
Talk about white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They were everywhere. Am I right, guys? Speaking of white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, today we're going to be talking about Janet Van Dyne, better known as the Wasp.
All right, I just to argue, my town consisted of Irish Catholics and Polish Catholics. There weren't wasps there. Except in the forest, they were full of wasps.
You know, Lainey's, I believe her field hockey team was actually called the Lady Wasps. Which I find hilarious. Yeah, they had to have Lady in there because I guess there's a big difference between the male wasp and the lady wasps. But they were the Lady Wasps, and they weren't great field hockey players, but they could eviscerate you with their coldness. Maybe I can't score a goal, but at least I can, you know, I have a little civility on the field. Thank you very much. Oh. So Janet Van Dyne, who wants to do a little bit of the background story on the Wasp?
Janet Van Dyne was created by Dan the Man Lee, Ernie Hart, and Jack Kirby, first appears in Tales to Astonish number 44 back in 1963. She is considered a human mutate, which is kind of like a mutant, but not quite, because she gets her powers from Hank Pym, giving her the Pym particles, allowing her to manipulate her size. She has little wings that allow her to fly. And later on, she develops bioelectric energy blasts and gets telepathic insect control. She is one of the founding members of the Avengers. She has had probably more outfits than any other character because for a time in the 1970s, she was a fashion designer and would redesign her costume every few issues.
I was eating a devil dog when I came up with this. Fun Alec fact, there is one superhero team or two superheroes who have more costumes. Can anyone name them? Mainstream comic book. Dial H for Hero, easily more different costumes.
Okay, yeah.
You Janet Van Dyne.
Yeah, you got
totally worth breaking for that, but actually it's true.
In the 1980s, she ended up marrying Hank Pym, and Pym became paranoid and abusive. Eventually, he actually struck her, and after that, she divorced him. Later on, went on to lead the Avengers. In the 1990s, she kind of retired from active duty of the Avengers, but in the 2000s, she came back. She's actually pretty cool at the end of the Avengers run during the Geoff Johns era and the Brian Michael Bendis stuff is pretty good. She actually takes on the entire Wrecking Crew at one point because she can't. She not only can she shrink, but she can also grow with those PIM particles, and she becomes a giant wasp and starts kicking their ass. So that was pretty cool. She has had a brief romance with fellow Avenger Hawkeye. In the comic books, after Civil War, she disappears, and that is because she gets stuck into the microverse. And it's not until in the 2010s when she gets rescued, kind of like the storyline they had in the Ant-Man Wasp movie. And there have been two other characters who are also been called the Wasp. Hank Pym has gone by that name as an homage when he thought Janet was dead. And Hank Pym's daughter, Nadia, is the current Wasp, and she has been granted use of that name by Janet Van Dyne. She doesn't care if another person's using her name.
Well, that's a pretty good rundown of the Wasp. She has been around for a long time. Was she wasn't one of the original Avengers, but real close, right?
No, she was the original.
Original. I thought she might have been, but I thought she might have been a hanger on for the first few issues.
Nope.
Well, all right then. So right up until present time. Just like, let's see, Thor, Iron Man.
Hulk. That's it.
That's about it.
Well, Hank Pym, whatever he's going by this week.
Whatever. Ronan.
No. Stop doing that.
Are you sure? Pretty sure he's Ronan.
Stop doing that.
Well, he is the scientist supreme. Not the husband supreme. We can all agree on that.
Not the husband supreme.
One of the reasons, of course, I really do enjoy civil rights and social justice issues in comic books. And this was one of the first comic books to explore
domestic violence. You
know, violence in a marriage. And depending on what issue you're going through, or you can see how a fairly intelligent, normal person could blame themselves for being part of an abusive relationship. So I think that might have helped some people, see the signs, see it coming, and, maybe feel a little bit better about trying to find some help. At least I hope that happened, at least in the mainstream one. Now, when it comes to Avengers Unlimited, what was the other one called, the more modern one? Guys?
I don't know
what you're talking about.
Avengers titles, Mighty Avengers.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Ultimates.
Ultimates, yeah.
Yeah, and the Ultimates, their domestic violence gets out of hand. And at one point, Hank Pym stomping on her in a small form and sicking ants at her to kill her. So it gets way out of hand in the Ultimates. I find that not to be a better storyline, but I think it's an interesting storyline to explore.
Yeah. My problem with the Wasp is I actually like her better in the movies than I do in the comic books. She's never been one to stand out to me in any of the comics that I've read, though I'm not as big an Avenger fan as LT is. So, LT, what are some of your favorite storylines?
So, I've got to say for the Wasp, I like Mighty Avengers Volume 1, the Ultron Initiative by Brian Michael Bendis and Frank Cho from 2007. In that, Iron Man handpicks a team of Avengers that's led by Miss Marvel, who later becomes Captain Marvel. Tony Stark says that the Wasp is the ultimate Avenger. And in that storyline, Ultron comes back, takes over Tony Stark, changes Tony Stark to a female version of Ultron that it looks just like Janet Van Dyne, and tries to do what Ultron always tries to do, which is destroy the world and take over. Hank has to develop a virus to take down Ultron. Ares, God of War, shrinks down using the PIM particles and is delivered into Ultron and defeats Ultron. And the Wasp has to go in at the very end to save Ares. And it's the Wasp kind of doing what she does best, which is kind of saving the day in her own special way, even though you don't expect her to be a real powerhouse against somebody like Ultron. And yet she was critical in all the different phases of battling Ultron. and you think, oh, the Wasp isn't really a powerhouse. She's not going to be effective against Ultron, but she was, because Ultron, based on Hank Pym's personality, has an innate love of the Wasp, and so doesn't want to immediately destroy the Wasp. And also, you know, because of Janet Van Dyne being the Wasp, she has, you know, such a grasp of her power set that she knows how to use her power set very well, even though she's not one of the strongest Avengers.
Yeah, sting in the ear is going to put almost anybody on their back, right?
Yeah, and she has. She has gone into people's ears and disabled the mightiest of giants that way.
And a couple of the female and male spellcasters, she shrunk down and just shot them in the tonsils. Kind of hard to do a verbal spell when someone's shooting you in the tonsils.
Sure. I've noticed that. Yeah, I can't cast a spell.
I mean, when she was first introduced, the Wasp's sting was just her holding a sewing needle. Whereas now she's got her own bioelectric blast.
You know, I like it better when the little lady has a sewing needle. So, little lady with a sewing needle.
She's been depicted as one of the better leaders of the Avengers. I'm going to recommend a series for somebody to check out. I say go, except for Josh, go check out Avengers Forever. Wasp really takes charge of a group of Avengers who are pulled from different points in time in a war between Immortus and Kang. Josh, you would totally hate this, but it is Kurt Busiek who is trying to come up with a way to explain all of the stupid frickin' plots that the Avengers had back in the Silver and Bronze Age covering Kang and Immortus. And he kind of pulls it off. But again, Wasp is a strong leader. She's got the team together. It's weird looking at such a strong leader because in other books, she's not depicted as that. In The Secret Wars, which is one of my favorite comics that I read when I was a kid, she defers leadership to Captain America in The Secret Wars, even though she was the leader of the Avengers at the time. And I think that was kind of a disservice that George Perez did to her.
Yeah, and I didn't like the reason. She says, well, we're at war, so we have to go with someone who's been to war. I kind of think leading the Avengers against Skrulls and, you know, other giant threats kind of constitutes war to me. But if you remember, she's like, yeah, we're at war now. We need someone who's been to war. We have to go with Captain America. I mean, good on her for, you know, wanting to put the best person there, but I don't think she did. I think she would have done a great job in Secret Wars.
Yeah, Josh, you got any series you can recommend?
I don't have a series to recommend, but what I like about the Wasp, and also what I think is pretty interesting, is that she's one of the few, and I've been trying to think of another character, who really goes from a science-based character to a more traditional superpower-based character over their lifespan. So she sort of starts out with the technology, and then it's sort of the Pym particle gets implanted, and then sort of that Pym particle sort of spreads throughout her system, and she really becomes a super in her own right. She doesn't really need the helmet, right? She gets the bioelectricity. She can telepathically communicate with the little critters without – she actually grows the antenna when she needs them. Do we know of anybody else this happens to? Anybody? Well, we think of another character?
Black Lightning.
Yeah. Damn it. You know, yeah, and you can also kind of go with the Flash.
No.
No.
Really? Because he was more sciencey based, and then the whole Speed Force thing kind of makes it a little bit more mystical in my mind. In my mind, it works out fine, so fuck off.
Well, but he's talking about like a technology based character, like
right. It's like if Iron Man could suddenly fly and shoot laser beams from his hands, which isn't the case, right?
Black Lightning originally had.
Hank Pym has a very similar sort of evolution, because initially he needs to ingest the Pym particles as well, but then later on, he in West Coast Avengers, he can just shrink and enlarge things without having to, you know, have the Pym particles around, because he's so quote unquote, you know, absorbed so many over time that they're just part of him.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, yeah, they're basically the same character, or yeah, different, you know, gender flips of a coin. But I mean, I don't think a lot of, okay, say Black Lightning. I didn't know Black Lightning started as
he was just a straight based hero, yeah, who had athletic abilities, and he had a belt that gave him a force field. And it, later on, he realized he could generate a force field and do lightning blasts without the use of the belt.
But did the belt give him those powers?
Originally, all his superpowers came from the belt.
So did they explore how they got there, or was it the fighters just turned up?
Yeah, it depends on what comic you're reading, because they didn't really
The power was yours all along, Dorothy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, but I think they have a scientific slash story arc that actually changes both Wasp and Ant-Man from technology-based heroes into actual supers, you know? I don't think it happens very often. It's kind of a cool concept.
Tony Stark kind of does that too, in that the armor becomes part of him.
Meh. It's still armor, right? It's not like, you know, Tony Stark just doesn't get out there and fly, or if they talk like nanobots, or I don't know.
But symbiote technology now.
It's, yeah, that's symbiotes. But no, I think there's still a little bit more of a distinction for the Wasp Ant-Man arc than that. I just think it was nice. It was nice to see. It's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, I think I got one more though. The Shade, the Changing Man. He doesn't need his vest anymore. Originally, it was all about the vest.
Yeah. Was that technology? I don't know.
Yeah,
don't know.
It was an interdimensional vest that gave him kind of these magic trippy interdimensional technology.
Oh, okay.
So it was a vest that he strapped on. It gave him power to change and go forth into different dimensions. And eventually he found that he'd been doing it so long he no longer needed the vest. So almost the same exact thing. Okay. Shade the Changing Man. It wasn't a very long story. Mike, do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you're talking about Jack Kirby stuff.
Yeah.
That's why it's all acid trip. Point,
it was an acid trip with nothing but Kirby crackle everywhere. Like, because he'd go through, like, he would kind of make people kind of trip out a little bit, and they would see these power bubbles and these other dimensions kind of forming in on them. And it was just Jack Kirby having a hell of a good time using every color he could find.
I mean, I think I actually picked up a Shade the Changing Man comic book, looked at it, and was like, I don't know what's going on here.
Shade's had a number of different iterations over the years. We'll have to do a podcast on Shade.
That's fair.
It is an interesting one because so many people did so many different things with him. But
and,
we're not talking
some
about
of them only bid $31.
We went off on a tangent there.
Yeah.
But that's something that Josh is better at. Josh, do you have a tangent for us?
Yeah. Thanksgiving tangent. Best way to cook turkeys.
Ooh,
what's your favorite turkey cookings?
I have a trick. I have a turkey trick. Are you guys ready? I think I tell you my turkey trick every year. I learned it in the military, and I always thought it was so smart. This cookie who was doing it says, I need help at 4 in the morning. I had to get up at fucking 4 in the morning to help Cookie with his trick. He baked the turkey super slow for the first, like, 5 hours upside down. So we had, like, 50 turkeys upside down, and we had to go in and take every single one and turn them up backside over. And he goes, if you do this and you cook them like this for the first 4 or 5 hours and then cook them higher, all the juice stays in the breast because all the juice flows into the breast. Then you flip them back over and you cook them up a little bit higher and it'll all stay up in there. Don't know if he was right. Don't know if he was wrong, but I know it was a delicious bird. And I do it to this day when I cook a turkey for myself because my wife's a vegan.
So for me, it's an orange bourbon glaze. We actually take oranges and stuff them into the turkey instead of stuffing. And we baste it in a shit ton of Knob Creek bourbon. It is so good and delicious and juicy. And eating the mashed potatoes with the gravy will get you drunk.
Mm.
That sounds delightful.
It does sound good.
So I am just a traditionalist. I just cover that sucker with tons and tons of butter.
Of course,
and Bell's seasoning, and stuff that sucker with tons of Bell's stuffing.
You know why? Because you learned to cook from your mom.
And I cook it low and slow.
Your mom thought that salt was an exotic spice to be reserved for special occasions.
No, you are incorrect.
I use a lot of Bell's seasoning, man. I love the Bell's seasoning on the
turkey. LT has cooked Thanksgiving dinner for me at least 3 or 4 times. He flew down to New Orleans several times just to make me Thanksgiving dinner. So his turkeys are good. Point? Yeah. He's a really good turkey maker.
Then how'd you get away from your mom's shadow?
It was very easy.
All right.
He saw what you did and did the opposite.
Didn't do it.
I just like saying spatchcocking, so I'm going to say spatchcocking.
What the hell is spatchcocking?
You cut the sucker in half.
It's basically when you bisect it just to the bottom of the breast. So the breast still sits on top, but everything splays out and lays flat, and you cut your cooking time in half.
Ooh, that's a good point. One thing that Mike and I used to like to do in New Orleans was the paper the next day. Mike, do you remember what we used to look at the paper the next day for?
I don't remember.
Turkey fires.
Oh, yeah, because of all the fried turkeys.
That's right. Deep fried turkey was a huge thing down in New Orleans, and they would put a map up, and you can see they put it on the map, the 20 or so fires that happened because people were deep frying their turkeys wrong. And yeah, they did this as a public warning, of course. But every year, my favorite one was this turkey fire. This guy says, well, I'm not going to be one of those guys. I'm going to have my fire pit outside. So he has the whole thing set up very nicely outside. Dumps in his turkey, frozen. The thing is just big enough to form a seal. Josh, what happens next? Science happens next.
Science says turkey cannon.
Turkey cannon for the win. This guy shot a turkey into space almost and went through his neighbor's, well, the neighbor like two blocks over, a neighbor's garage.
Yeah, so, you can't call in danger close turkey frying. Yeah. That's a no-no.
So, yeah, we used to love reading how many people burned their house down or launched a turkey into a neighbor's backyard or worse, garage. Come on, New Orleans, you're better than that. Though, when I lived in San Francisco, the place of the Kentucky Fried Chicken down the street would allow you to bring in a turkey and they would deep fry it for you for $5.
Wow.
And it was a great deal.
Yeah.
You know, you leave your turkey with them, you come back and like, fine, they batter dipped it in Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, shit. And they deep fry it, and you come back in like 40 minutes, and boom, they hit cheese turkey. It was terrific.
Ah.
It was right. Not bad. Delicious, too.
Any other Thanksgiving traditions we want to share with the listeners?
Well, you know, my wife and I, we have the same Thanksgiving tradition we've been doing for years now, which is we do a turkey trot in the morning. I have to skip mine this year because I very badly rolled my ankle yesterday. So I'm skipping the turkey trot. But we then go to a casino. Sometimes we'll go to Reno, we'll fly out to Vegas. We'll go down and see Mikey down in New Orleans and go to a casino down there. But we like the sadness that you see, like, cranked way up at a casino on Thanksgiving. It's terrific. Makes us feel better about our marriage.
So you're thankful that you're not the other people in the casino, Tom?
Yeah, pretty much.
When I was a kid, we used to go to wrestling at the Springfield Civic Center on Thanksgiving night. They had it like three or four years in a row. Yeah, I remember going with my dad. It was freaking phenomenal. Saw Tony Atlas wrestle Killer Khan, and that is the moment I realized that it was a work because the guy said, I saw this match last week. This is what's about to happen. And told me everything that was happening before it happened. It was like sitting next to a rude Nostradamus.
What a dick.
My dad, after that match, turned around to the guy and said, hey, you need to leave. And he's like, what? And my dad was like, you need to leave. You're ruining this for my son. And the guy got up and left.
Oh, Charlie was a – yeah. We all did whatever Charlie said, mostly out of respect, but remember what your dad taught us about fight.
That's right. Doesn't matter how big a guy is, when he's on the ground and you're kicking him.
Kicking him.
Oh, they all get pretty short. So I think that's terrific. And I, once again, am saddened by the horror that was my childhood and wish I was you.
I wish I had known you because my dad would let me bring friends with me. Like the Clark boys went with me a whole bunch of times. And so I would have totally taken you, Tom.
Thank you. I did go to wrestling once. My dad was dropping off something for one of my uncles. And I saw the Iron Sheik versus Bob Backlund for the title. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I distinctly remember it. I was very happy about that. It's a good memory. Good memory. Let's focus on those, Tom. Hey, Mike, what do you got at the front of the long box this week?
At the front of the long box, I have Green Lantern by friend of the podcast, Liam Sharp. He's the artist on this, and the writer is Grant Morrison, which means it's either going to be spectacular or I'm not going to understand it.
It might be a little rapey.
No, it's not Alan Moore. It's Grant Morrison.
Oh, sorry. I sometimes get those names confused.
So forget everything that you've been reading in Green Lantern for the last few years. Grant Morrison don't give a damn. He has thrown that all to the side and is going in a new direction. This time he wants to view Hal Jordan as an intergalactic cop. And, of course, because Grant Morrison's stuff is always trippy, there are some new, very trippy lanterns that are introduced, and you find out a whole bunch of other things about the Green Lantern Corps. For example, there are beings that you can't actually see who are members of the Green Lantern Corps because they exist on different planes of reality. There's also a Green Lantern virus who doesn't catch bad guys. The bad guys catch him, which is actually pretty cool. The art style is very European, and it looks very trippy, and it is perfect for the tale that Morrison is telling. He's trying to explore how a guy who goes from a fighter test pilot to intergalactic lawman, when he comes back to Earth, and this all happened in the 70s, decides at different points to sell toys and then to be an insurance adjuster. It's not congruent, and he's trying to go back into what makes Hal Jordan tick. I'm going to give it a few more issues. It's going to be well worth the wait, I think.
Tell me, my friend, what do you got in the back of the law box for us today?
I've got Avengers Mythos by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, Mike Benson, Adam Glass, and Kyle Higgins.
I would say you got two names right. Josh, what do you say, over under?
Wait, the whole names are just part of the surnames and last names.
Gotta have a whole name.
I say he nailed all of it.
I say it was zero. Let's keep going.
Price is Right rules. I'm going to go with Josh Wins. Go ahead.
So Avengers Mythos is a collection of retellings of the origin stories of different Avengers. And it's really kind of a hodgepodge of which Avengers they chose. I mean, it's Hulk, Captain America, Ant-Man and Wasp, Luke Cage, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, Vision and Thor. But it's collection of them, and they're really, really fantastic retellings. They're kind of reimagined too, so the stories are changed a little bit, but a lot of them have these very beautiful painted artwork in them, and it's a really great collection that I recommend.
Quick question, is the secret origin for Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver just their mom giving birth?
No,
okay, just curious.
Is the secret origin of Thor 1,000 years of Norse mythology?
No.
It's odd.
Like you said, they're reimagined, so...
Distinctly abbreviated.
Is this on Comixology?
And in it, since we've been talking about Wasp, in it, the story of Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, Janet is kind of the aggressor in their relationship, pursuing Hank. So it was kind of an interesting retelling of their courtship.
She was always the more amorous of the two in the early comics. you know, going by the old trope, you know, the hotshot wife, she was more in love with him, and he was a little bit more all about the science than the Avengers, in my mind.
Yeah, but she was actively pursuing him in this comic, so it was very interesting.
She was doing a lot. I think the reason some of the storylines involved her joining the Avengers and wearing the costumes and going out with them just to get his attention, like specifically just to make herself more a part of his life. So I think that's a little part of the main mythos. Just saying.
But it's a really great book, and it's a really, like I said, has some beautiful artwork in it.
Well, I can't wait to read this one. This sounds like one I like. Do they change?
Yeah, I might not like it because the retelling of Luke Cage's story is not quite as Puritan as his original.
What do you mean by not as Puritan? They make him even more of a bad guy?
I'm just saying that, you know, he wasn't always a good guy in this story.
Of course not.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll still read it just to see how bad they screw over my boy. All right. Well, that's most of our little things. Josh, you had something over there, buddy?
Yeah.
You look so disappointed while you're hearing this, though.
What, I've got the Celtics game muted to my left.
Okay.
God damn it.
I had to know. Josh made the same face. You know, he usually reserves for something terrible going on at work, or, you know, the time we find out his wife was cheating on him with a bear. So how bad did the Celtics screw up?
Dude, they're down 43-26 to the Knicks.
Well, I can't wait to go see him fight the Grizzlies. Go Grizz! Hey, it seems like they have a problem with bear-related teams. So I got a chance.
Got a chance.
Knickerbockers, look it up. Read a book. Anybody have any last parting thoughts on the Wasp or anything about this podcast?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com or just download their music on iTunes or Bandcamp.
How about you, LT? Anything to add?
I'm thankful for geekorthodox.com.
Me too. I'm glad they're in their new home. They just they put their house on the market. They just moved a little bit closer to town where they got away from the bear.
A bears.
They had a bear. And not just a little bear. I mean, it was a pretty good sized bear.
Who also knew how to work doorknobs. So nobody wants the bear who knows how to open doors at your house.
Yeah, that's never a good idea.
Never a good thing.
But what does geekorthodox.com sell, LT?
They sell posters, stained glass prints, and other geeky things such as Johnny Skywalker Rocks glasses.
I believe they are the official stained glass provider for John Barrowman.
And they have a fine line of amazing t-shirts, and they also sell some great socks.
They do what?
Needs.
They sell socks?
They do sell socks.
Used?
I think they only sell new socks.
Just transfer a dollar to Ian.
What? I was just asking a question about their product.
Right.
I think we should also tell everybody we will probably be doing a panel at Wizard World New Orleans January 4th, 5th, or 6th. Not sure what, because they have not responded to our email. Tom, you're going to get on that, though, right?
I will get on that, and not only will I get on that, but even if they don't, we'll probably get a table, right?
Maybe.
That's a resounding maybe from our good friend Mike. And I would also like to plug Pensacon that's coming up. We're definitely going into Pensacon. We'll probably be doing 4 or 5 different things there, including hopefully doing a Tai Chi class with Timac. That's right, Bruce Leroy himself has said that he'd be very interested in doing a thing with us. We have a couple of other panels that we're going to pitch this year, including Girls We Have Cranked It To. Josh is shaking his head. I don't really know. In which we invite well-known actors and actresses from TV shows from the past, like Aaron Gray.
Karen Allen.
Yeah, and just say, hey, you know, just so you know, we really cranked it a lot to you. How you doing so, now?
That sounds
Pensacon,
like
92 days till Pensacon, and I have to say Trisha Helfer's going to be there.
Cranked it to her.
She's getting the hug speech.
She's getting the hug speech.
Getting the hug speech for me.
And that will do it for us over here. Mikey, well, what is
we also should encourage people to go over to Patreon, and for just $1 a month, you can become a backer for us, and you get a free podcast. Every week we do podcasts called The GOAT Greatest of All Time. In addition to that, we have a YouTube channel where we're doing the secret origins of different people. We've got Josh up right now, and I am working on a few other secret origins for that. Just go to YouTube and search for The Long Box Guys. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at The Long Box Guys.
And as long as we're just talking about some stuff that's upcoming, we're thinking about doing another podcast. We're pretty sure we're going to at least do a couple called The Misfits of Podcast, where we do a episode-by-episode podcast about the misfits of science. If anyone out there thinks this is a good idea, just let us know. Give us some encouragement.
Yeah. We need the encouragement, folks.
We know no one from the original cast will do it, because that only leaves like Courtney Cox, because the shadow of death has followed this TV show and its actors around from day one.
Yeah, they didn't even finish the first season before they started dying. It's just.
There's a curse. That's all we're saying.
There's a curse. Right. Either you wind up dead or you have to marry David Arquette. Either way, it's not going to be good.
Doesn't not end turning well. Out well for you.
And that'll do it for us this week. Josh, when we're in Pensacon, is that your sector?
Oh, yeah. All of North Florida is my sector.
Damn right. It's the only one that didn't get hit by a hurricane every 2 minutes. Mikey.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm pretty drunk. I can't remember what that. Oh, what is this podcast like for you?
Well, it's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Yeah, it is. And Tommy, sweet, sweet Tommy, whom I love, what words of wisdom can you give us for the pitch black darkness, the hellhole from which you are podcasting from?
Hey, everybody. Just be thankful for what you got.
Like lights?
Just like this podcast. It may not be what you desire, but it is what you got.
Thanks, podcasting. Happy holidays, everyone.
Like your podcast was at the bottom of a blueberry pie. Like you did something bad in Willy Wonka's factory and you're condemned to this.
I said good day, sir.
Good day, sir. Room of shame? Did she make you a room of shame and you have to sit in there?
We'd say blink twice if you're being trapped, but that wouldn't work because we wouldn't know.
Tell you.
Did he blink? What room is this over here, LT?
That's the bedroom.
Of course it is. Of course it is. That's exactly what I thought it was. The despair, the blackness, the feeling of just utter abandonment of hope. Of course, that's your bedroom.